Hey there. Welcome to our Life SaaS Academy AMA sessions. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with awesome experts on specific SaaS-related topics to bring more value to SaaS community and hopefully share some really unique knowledge, especially today. Very, very exciting. Hour ahead of us. With me today is Mike and Ali. Mike is a co-founder of a marketing agency, creator of AI courses with almost 500,000 students, right? And an author of a book on prompt engineering. And Ali here is serial entrepreneur and CTPO of Zenloop, one of our beloved brands at SaaS Group that recently relaunched with full AI glam. So yeah, got a few super hot topics to discuss here today. So welcome, guys. It's great to see you here.
Yeah, good to be here.
Cool. All right, Ali will figure out how mute and unmute works as we go. But yeah, I mean, I gave you just like a very brief intro, but maybe, let's start with a quick background in like minutes or two, who you are, what you do. Ali, let's start with you.
All right, so very excited to be here. I do a lot of AI. I think about 17, 18 hours a day only of creating AI apps. So Zenloop is one where we just redid everything, and AI is at the core of Zenloop now, and we'll see some interesting things today as well. Other than that, I have recently I launched a Reddit to podcast service called Rodcast. It basically takes automatically Reddit threads and convert them into an engaging podcast and publish them to Spotify, Apple, and so on. So quite a few users are using it. I also have an AI platform, which is creating chatbots and voice bots and voice agents and knowledge management. It's called workhub.ai. So yeah, I keep myself quite busy with everything to do with applying AI to different problems.
All right, Mike.
Also, yeah, so I'm Mike Taylor, also obsessed with AI and it's taking over my whole life. But I come from a marketing background. I started a marketing agency back when growth hacking was new and cool, and then grew that to 50 people, and then left in 2020. Got access to GPT-3 the same year. So I've been playing around with AI since then. And now I've written a book with O'Reilly on AI, on prompt engineering specifically, and have a Udemy course on it as well. So yeah, all day, every day, just not basically not nothing I do now is not using AI.
Awesome. All right. It sounded like a little bit like we have a meeting of AI Engineers Anonymous. I'm Mike and I'm obsessed with AI. Hi, Mike. But yeah, super cool to have you here. Like I said, I had a chat with Ali, I don't know, like 2, 3 weeks ago, and I was like, man, we have to do a session like this because this is like mind blowing. And then we met with Mike, and well, I got deeper into understanding that AI can do like just magical things. So I guess this could be helpful to a lot of people out there, a lot of founders, especially bootstrappers trying to automate everything, not maybe having big teams to do all stuff. So yeah, before we get into like really how to, automate your customer communication and create content out of it, maybe like, again, I think a lot of people out there, using AI for them means using ChatGPT, right? So are there any other tools that you guys are using? Like, for example, at SaaS Group, we also leverage a lot of Team GPT, which is great for like team collaborations and like just sharing your prompts and like how things work for you. So yeah, what about you, Mike?
I'm actually not a big tool user, weirdly. Everyone always asks me, like, which AI tools should I use? And I found that since AI has gotten good at coding, I very rarely need to reach for a tool. It's usually quicker to build it myself than it is to understand the marketing message on a company's homepage. So, and or you know, talk to sales or whatever. So I'm maybe a bit of a purist, but yeah, I'm almost always talking, you know, talking to the APIs directly, like talking to the main model companies. You know, mentioned ChatGPT or you know GPT-4 if you're using it through the API as a developer, but also Claude. I would say Claude from Anthropic is now, you know, something I talk to more than any human. So it's writing 90% of my code. It's, you know, helping me with marketing copy. It's writing blog posts for me. But yeah, it's basically my little assistant. It's taken over from ChatGPT for me.
Super, Ali. Is it only
Yeah,
your
so
tools as well?
it's quite similar, and I think it's primarily because it's so easy to create things based on exactly your specification that you end up creating things rather than using something existing. And the other thing is also a lot of the tools for AI specifically are very new, and so everything has some rough edges, and so it's actually faster if you are doing it yourself to make it exactly as per your specs. But in terms of tools, what I use is like Mike, I also use Claude very heavily. Claude recently launched their MCP, which is like a very powerful way to access local files and so on. So it's become quite powerful. I use ChatGPT with Canvas, for example, very heavily to do requirements and to make specific, let's say, documents for whatever I'm creating. I use Cursor for coding, for basically as a main code editor. I used to use Visual Studio, now it's only Cursor. And apart from that, it's all self-built tools. For example, when I'm doing outbound outreach, it's all custom tools and just automating things with APIs, like Mike said. So it's very, very similar. Once you are into it, it's actually things have become quite simple to create and so on. Like last time when we talked about how podcasts can how can we can make a tool around podcast, and we just created on the on during our call and during what we are doing. For that, I was also using Bolt.new, which is also very exciting. And so yeah, so I would say that SaaS is in a very interesting space now. Interesting that we do it on SaaS group platform, but we are in a very interesting world now.
That's true. And that's exactly the story. That's what happened. Like we talked and I was like, "Hey, like you said it's so easy now to like basically build an AI tool. I have this problem with the podcast. Like I would love to do this and this and this." And Ali went like, "Okay, well let's see what we can do." Like 4 hours later, he's like, "Okay, so I launched this platform that you can use." And you're like, "Oh shit, it's been like 4 hours literally." And you know it's fascinating that obviously you can build stuff, but again, like for you know simpler human beings who cannot really code or like figure it out, we use prompts, right? And we try to figure out how prompts work, right? For Team GPT or Chat GPT. So you know, Mike, you probably know quite a bit about this, but I went through a few of your blog posts. And a couple were, so one was AI responding well to threats. You know, I'm always polite to AI because you never know. And then AI understands you better when you ask it to pretend. So like, I don't know, pretend you're what, a SaaS founder and write a post. So like, I'm very curious, like how do you actually work with prompts? How do you like effectively prompt ChatGPT, Team GPT, whatever you're using to actually learn who you are, what you want to be, and sound human and actually work for, you know, your copy and customer communication and whatnot.
Yeah, no, good question. And I think the main insight that I have from working with these tools is the more you treat them like a human coworker, the better the results you get from them, strangely, because we're used to things, you know, a computer being good at math, and you know, a computer is logical and deterministic, and you know, you run the computer with the same function every time, it will get the same result. And that is not at all how LLMs work. They're, you know, automating the creative work actually in a lot of cases before they are automating things like math or physics. And that's still like, they're still not great at those things. So, you know, the one you mentioned about AI responding to threats is interesting because, when you say, you know, like in the early days of prompting, it was very hard to get them to follow instructions. And when you say something like, if you don't do a good job on this, someone will be fired or someone will die, it actually does do a better job. Like what, there's a paper that studied this called emotion prompting, I think is the name of the paper. And they found that if you put, this is very important for my career, at the bottom of your prompt, then it will actually do a better job. And the reason why it does a better job, I think, is pretty instructive and helps you understand these tools. The reason it works that way is because it's trained on the internet. And on the internet, there's just been lots of humans interacting. And they found that, you know, say on Reddit, if it's been trained on Reddit posts, they've seen that you know, when someone says this is really important for my career, they actually do get more diligent responses at the bottom. You know, people do respond more diligently when there's an emotional trigger because humans want to help other humans, and it's learned to do that, right? Like it's learned to replicate that. They also found interestingly that around Christmas time, like where we are now, the LLMs get a little bit lazier. Like they give you shorter responses, and they've just learned that, you know, when it's around this time of the year, like humans more checked out, right? Like they're about to go on holiday, so they don't give as long of a response. So it's learned our bad habits as well. And I think that the way you should see these tools is as kind of like a imperfect human brain simulator. You know, they're not great, like they're not as smart as the human brain. They don't have as many parameters yet, but they are pretty good at approximating what a human would really respond. And that kind of feeds into the role-playing prompting that you mentioned as well, which is you just have to kind of need to tell it, like, what type of human do you want it to simulate? Because, you know, the average response you get from ChatGPT is going to be kind of boring because it's, you know, the average response on the internet is kind of boring and dull, you know. But if you say, I want you to act like Shakespeare, or I want you to act like a SaaS founder, or I want you to act like the type of customer would buy my product, it does a pretty reasonable job of pretending to be in that role. So one of the things that I think most SaaS founders could do today is they could just say, give me 10 customer personas for my product, which is X. And it will give you some pretty good customer personas, and you can say, now here's my new ad. What do you guys think of this? Right. And you can get, you know, 10 different diverse responses from different types of people who might buy your product. And that can really help you sense check whether, you know, your ad is good or your landing pitch copy makes sense, or, you know, the new feature you're working on, whether that's a good idea or not. And I think it's a pretty good proxy for how people will react in the real world.
That's a pretty cool hack. Ali, do you prompt still the, you know, the normal kind of tools that we're all using?
I have a slightly different view on it. So the way I look at it is that all of the AI and LLM tools are essentially knowledge and information centers and data sources. And we are basically doing search input, and we get an output which is conversational, so it's more user friendly than just simple output, right? Back in the day, we used to say people should know how to search on Google, right? Now we say people should know how to prompt an AI engine. And in general, the way I think about it is that because the output is all probabilistic, if you want probabilistic output, which is like all kind of creative stuff, then you make it as open-ended as you would like, and you can leave things gray as well. However, if you want the output to be deterministic and you want a precise output, then your input needs to be precise as well. So for example, if we are creating a software, let's say podcast, and I want to be able to have a deterministic output and I want AI to figure out what is the summary of a Reddit thread and things like that, then it's far better to not leave the input prompt as open-ended text, but rather provide input data as a structured, in programming terms, a JSON input, and the same way you want the output to be JSON and structured output as well, and so on and so forth. And this, what I've seen is that this is where a lot of people kind of used to get frustrated that AI is hallucinating or whatnot, but it's essentially, it's not really hallucinating. It's probabilistic output. It's just filling in the gaps on its own. And it sounds like it's going off course and so on. So what I do is, because most of the time I'm doing very specific work, So for example, we are creating surveys, and to create a survey, we want to prompt it, create a customer satisfaction survey. To create a customer satisfaction survey, we actually provide a JSON input and not a free text, create a customer satisfaction survey. In that JSON text, we say, this is a customer who is in e-commerce. This is a customer who is doing, let's say, customer touch point, checkout and whatnot. And that, all of that becomes like an input. And then there is an output, which is a survey auto-created by AI with all the right things and so on. So I would say it's really that the whoever is using it needs to think whether they want to have an open-ended conversation like you would do with, let's say, ChatGPT voice thing. You just want to have an open-ended conversation, or you want it to specifically do something. And if you want it to do a task, then you need to be as specific as possible, preferably with examples, with the structured input and so on. And then you get a really good output as well. And that can make a difference between very, very efficient in doing your tasks or being frustrated in trying to iterate over the quality of output. And I think that's the key power if people use it like that.
Yeah, awesome. I feel like, well, I first of all, I agree with you, but I feel like a lot of people just want kind of like, they want to treat ChatGPT or whatever they're using as a magic wand. So like basically, yeah, write a piece of content for me. I act as a SaaS founder, what I would say about this topic, and then boom, human touch, like really great copy for your website. But I think that's kind of the key thing to understand. You still have to work on it. You still have to be precise and like feed it information before it gives something back. But yeah, let's dive maybe a little bit deeper into actual content creation, right? And using your customer communication or your customer feedback. So that was a great start from Mike, that you know, you can create personas for a market research if you're early stage. So is there a way for AI to kind of predict customer needs or like questions and make sure that when you actually go into communication with them, you have it like proactively, you already know what you're talking about, what you're asking, like from kind of, is there a specific roadmap that you would recommend? Like you created that persona and like, what do you do next? Like you're launching your product. Like what's the journey there?
Yeah, I could take that. So I would say that when you're not giving it any context and you're just saying, hey, I'm a SaaS founder and I'm building this product and it is just relying on whatever was on the internet when it was trained. And you have to think everyone else has access to the same ChatGPT, right? So you're going to converge, I think, on relatively uncreative ideas, and your blog post might sound the same as someone else's blog post, right? Or your LinkedIn posts might sound not very differentiated, right? Like you won't be much of a thought leader if they're not really your thoughts, right? So usually what I try and do, I think the mistake people make with AI is they say, we're going to use the AI to generate something and then we're going to get a human to check it. And I think that's the wrong way around. The best way to do it is to treat the AI as a ghostwriter. Like AI is very good at writing, right? Like it rarely makes grammar mistakes or anything. It's much more reliable than a human. But what it doesn't have the capability to do is to have real human experiences. So, you know, I ran a marketing agency. When I tried to implement value-based pricing in my marketing agency, it completely failed for us. We actually got really badly stung by like a few contracts where performance was bad and we had nothing, you know, nothing we could do about it, or you know, projects were delayed and we couldn't get performance. If you Google, should I adopt value-based pricing? you all the blog posts are like, yeah, of course you should do value-based pricing. That's the best thing to do. And when I read that, I'm like, no, this is terrible. It was one of the worst decisions we ever made. And so that's my unique opinion and experience, and I can talk about that. And that's something that, you know, if I you know, get the AI to interview me on the topic of value-based pricing and it's asking me questions, then that experience comes out into the prompt. And then I say, okay, now based on the interview transcript, now can you go and create create a blog post about my take on value-based pricing? So you kind of you're using it as a ghostwriter, as like a journalist, to kind of bring the real human story to the forefront. And I think that, you know, it's my insights. It feels a lot more like my words than when I do create a LinkedIn post from that, or when I do create a blog post from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ali, did you use kind of some kind of a playbook maybe when you were relaunching Zenloop with AI? Like, were you doing some kind of, again, AI-powered research with your customers?
So I actually do a lot of that. So what I'm doing is, and Mike was right about that in terms of creating context. So everything that we are doing, every customer, every... let's say customer of our customer that is coming in, what we are trying to do is to create as much as big of a context as we can, because the broader the context or more accurate the context, the more we can do with that context. If we have very little context, we can do very little. For example, if somebody comes on, and this was the first thing that I started thinking about, that if we have a new customer who comes on Zenloop and we know nothing about that customer, what kind of survey creation option should we show them? What should be the customer journey for that customer if we don't really know what the industry is and what their pain points are and so on and so forth, right? If we start knowing that, let's say this industry is e-commerce, we already know, okay, in e-commerce, these are the customer journeys that are there. Then the person says, okay, I'm trying to solve a problem with my reputation. Let's say if I'm a hotel, now I already know what kind of reputation issues can be there. And then you can actually do a lot better personalization, a lot better prediction, and so on and so forth based on what is there. And then the only main thing that you have to do is to collect the data as deeply as you can for the target persona that you are serving. For example, hotels is a very good example. If there is a customer review that says, for example, I had a great experience at this hotel, but the Wi-Fi sucked or something like that. Now I know that this means that this will show up on Trust TripAdvisor, for example, and the negative reviews on TripAdvisor cost 14% of people to drop off and not book. And that is a X percent revenue hit directly. And so now whenever a person immediately writes a summary that, hey, I had bad Wi-Fi in my room, we know immediately what is coming up next. So it's a very easy way to give insights, to have an actionable feedback for our customer to do what is the next step they can do. And this can be replicated on any industry. It's not just hotels. As example is very relevant and people understand that, but it's any industry. You can have, as you can create personas and contextual information, and then you can predict what is coming up next, and then you can take predictive actions and be more proactive in terms of the steps that you take. And we can apply that to our own stuff as well. When we are doing, let's say, outreach for sales, it's the same topic. If we are outreaching to a cold contact, we know their persona, we know their context, we will be more accurate. If we don't know it, it's a cold call, and cold calls don't work like that.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. And I mean, we will probably, like, in a few minutes, just also demo how it works with cold calling, with automated cold calling. And that's something that I'm super excited about. Like, when I saw it for the first time, I was like, what? That's not happening. But, you know, to this point, like, a lot of people will be like, oh, I'm never automating, you know, a call. Like, first of all, it's going to sound like robotic and horrible. Second, like, how do I trust that, you know, this AI thing is going to say all the right things? So I think there is a lot of, like, trust issues towards, like, automating with especially with calls. How are you working with that, Ali? Like, is there any way to, like, make sure that errors are minimal.
You know, I always I think of it as different. I say that it is much harder to trust humans with cold calls than AI, because with AI you can prompt it and you train it and you provide the parameters on where they can stay. With the human, you can't, and the humans have moods. AI doesn't have mood. Humans have a lot of other variables that we can't control. So, from a reliability perspective, I think AI is far more reliable than humans. But on the other side, if you want to make it more trustworthy, it's a question of creating a fence or guardrails around it. That, let's say, if somebody asks a question which is outside of the scope, it comes back to the context question. And I said, hey, we have to have JSON input, JSON output, and all that. And it's if the more context you add and the more guardrails you add, the more deterministic the output is. But it also, the more deterministic the output, the narrower the output. And so it is a fine line between how narrow you want it to be and how broad you want it to be, because it's a fine line between between not going crazy and not being sounding like yes no. For example, if you say, Ali, you can only answer yes no, it will be very brief. And now you say, now you can say yes no maybe, then it becomes a little bit more enriched. If you say, you can say explanation and stuff as well, but now you're not sure what I'm going to say next in terms of if it expands. So it's a fine line, and it depends on the use case to use case, but you can manage it. In my opinion, it is easier manageable with AI, and it will become even better as we go further than humans. And at some point, for these kind of things, if we need reliability, we would start preferring AI over humans, and humans would be purely creative, unreliable, non-deterministic output. And with everything else, it has to be AI.
All right. Mike, have you ever had like an experience with, an AI call where you didn't figure it out?
I had something with a blog post actually. It was I accidentally ran a Turing test. A Turing test is where you try and guess whether it's a computer or a human. And I had a situation where I had generated a whole ebook just with ChatGPT. And it took a little bit of time because I generated one section at a time. But I went to bed and I had like the ebook on my Google Drive. And one of my clients, I didn't realize I had access to that. And they when I woke up in the morning, I looked and there were hundreds of comments on the ebook. And I was like, oh my God, it's going to be really terrible. They're going to really hate my work. And they're gonna, not like the fact that I used AI. Because the whole it was gonna do this as a proof of concept and say, like, look, is this any good? And all the comments were glowing. They were actually happier with the results than they normally are with my work. Right? So it was a pretty eye-opening moment for me. And I realized that actually, when it's a blind test, most people don't know and don't care whether it's AI or not. I also managed to do some of these more explicitly with. I was in Lenny's newsletter. It's a popular product manager newsletter. Maybe some of your audience is subscribed as well. We did some blind tests like this of different product manager tasks with Lenny's audience. He tweeted out his A, his B, which answer to the question is best, which answer to the task is best. And the really interesting thing that came out of that, this is the first time I've seen this. People could guess which one was AI because they said the AI was better. We've gone in maybe 12 months from people being able to tell which one was AI because it was the worst one to now people are they can tell it's AI but only because there's no mistakes. And therefore they actually voted the AI ones as being better overall. So that was a real eye-opener for me because I was trying to hide the, I was trying to craft my prompts so that they couldn't guess which one was AI. And in the end, actually, they could guess, but the surprise result was just that they preferred the AI version. And you're seeing that across all over, anywhere AI is being deployed, right? Like self-driving cars. I was in a Waymo car in San Francisco recently, the one without the driver completely. It's just like imagine calling an Uber and then you get in the car and there's no driver. And within 10 minutes, I felt completely relaxed. I was checking my phone just like I would in a normal Uber, except this time I didn't have a driver like driving like erratic around the roads talking to me when I'm trying to get work done, you know. So it was actually a way better experience, and now I like would massively prefer the AI version of Uber than the human version. So I think this is going to happen in every category where AI is being deployed.
Something should be automated. Yeah, I agree. Sometimes I run this test. I would, you know, take one of the blog posts that they've written like long ago and run it through, AI checker. And it will be like so bizarre, like 11% chance that this is written by AI. Oh, this is definitely written by AI. And like, I would check like in 16 different tools and they would all be different. And I'm like, okay, this is so weird. But then, yeah, you go to LinkedIn and you guys said that no one really cares if it's AI or not. I don't know. You can still tell. Like some are.
No,
some
are not. I think people. Yeah, no. The thing is, people care if it's good or not, right? Okay. If it's good, then you don't even ask whether it's AI. So I think the problem right now is that it's mostly really lazy people who are fully automating everything with AI and not putting any insight into the posts. That they're the problem, right? Like they're the one where like you get like a really irrelevant, dorky comment on the bottom of your LinkedIn post, and you're like, well, that's obviously AI. But the problem is just that it's not good. It's just not very thoughtful, the prompt they've used, right? Because of, you know, they just kind of automate it. But like, I mean, most people are really surprised when they find out that almost all of my LinkedIn posts are AI. And like, I have friends that say, oh, I love what you posted about this the other day. And I'm like, oh, you're going to have to tell me what it was because I actually don't know. And the reason why they're useful is because we took my whole book, like that I wrote, like 400 pages. All of the modules, there's 150 modules on AI in my course, and I just took all the transcripts and we just automated creating content. So we extracted all the insights from everything I've written, all the examples, and then generated like 200 something social posts. So they're based on something that I really wrote, and they're based on real insights. And I think that's the difference between like what I'm posting and what some of these spammers are posting.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
You know, I wanted to call this session how to automate the hell out of everything. So I guess that's where we're getting. But let's get to that, you know, to the point, like why we're all here. Let's try and create something. I mean, right here on the spot, let's see if it works. But yeah, Ali, maybe we can try your super bot that blew my mind. We'll do an example about Zenloop, our company at SaaS Group, and we'll just kind of pretend to be a customer and then write a post about it.
Let me do that. One thing I will say is that just to comment on the previous thing, that if we have human, let's say, interactive stuff, I think our imperfections are really the perfections. So if we are too perfect, then it sounds too robotic and bad. And so whenever there is interactive stuff going on, then whether it's chat or it's voice or whatever it is, the imperfections are actually better than making it like fully perfect. It's like a little bit counterintuitive, but that's what I've found that makes the experience better. So what I'll do is I'll call our support line, and I'll, let's say I pretend to be a customer a random one, let's say Teza. Teza is this duct tape company and so on. That's just a random. And let's see what our support person actually says. And it could fail because this is live and anything can fail on live calls and stuff. So this I was in a session here at Mirantix, and then I was calling, and then it couldn't answer at, somehow at that time. So it can fail. But having said that, let's do a call. Let's see how it works out.
Hi, this is Alex. How can I help you?
Hi, Alex. This is Ali. I'm calling because can you tell me about ZenLoop a bit?
I'd be happy to tell you about how ZenLoop helps businesses collect and act on customer feedback. We specialize in AI-powered surveys for satisfaction measurement and NPS.
All right, wait.
Would you like to learn about specific...
Yeah, just I'm calling from Teza, and how can you help us, especially on Amazon?
Teza, that's a well-known brand. We actually work with a lot of companies that sell on Amazon. We can help you collect and analyze customer feedback, identify areas for improvement, and even help you increase your overall seller rating. Would you like to learn more about how we can specifically help Teza?
I think you got my name wrong. It's not Teza. It's Teza, and we do duct tapes and all. So could you look up on Amazon and see what feedback I currently have?
I apologize for the mix-up, Ali. Teza, known for adhesive products, specifically duct tapes, ZenLoop can help you manage and analyze customer feedback on Amazon. For example, we can streamline your feedback collection across all your products. Would you like a summary of some typical reviews for your product?
I want to know if there's a negative review. Just give me a summary.
Sure. One negative review mentioned that the tape didn't work well on plastics. The customer tried to attach a plastic TV cable box using the tape, but it fell off after about an hour. Other reviews have highlighted excellent adhesion and easy removal, but this specific experience points out a limitation on certain surfaces.
Wow.
Would you like to discuss how we can help you?
Yeah. But tell me something. Are you AI?
Yes, I am an AI assistant, but I'm here to help you just like a human would. It's a little tricky, but I'm doing my best. How can I assist you further?
Okay. That's fine. Can you book a demo for next week?
Absolutely. I can help you book a demo for next week. What day and time work best for you?
A Monday would be good.
Great. What time on Monday works best for you?
9 a.m. CET.
I've scheduled your demo for Monday at 9 o'clock a.m. Pacific time. Thank you for your interest in ZenLoop.
No, doesn't matter. All right. But yeah, so that's about it. And you can see that it's looking. So one of the things that you'll realize is that this is actually searching online and doing information lookup. And if there's delay in it, and there was a little bit lag there, but if there is more delay, then you can tell, and then a normal person would repeat itself, and then there's those things that have to be managed. But I don't think we are too far away from a time where you would rather speak with an AI who is not putting you on hold and not putting, like, not just listening to you compared to a human. And in terms of if they can help, they will help. If they can't help, they can't help. And so it's probably a better experience for a lot of customers. So
the fact that they picked up straight away, you know, like that alone, it was, I'm like, okay, great. This is not an experience I've been used to having.
Yeah, and imagine in IVRs, like you can't have those. Who wants to dial IVRs? Like press 1 to do this, press 2 to do this, press like whatever. You don't want to have all of that. It just, everything gets changed.
Yeah, there was no elevator music, so we figured out it's not real.
It's a win.
but yeah, super cool. Now what we're going to do next is Ali will get the transcript and send it. We still use email, normal people email. Can we use something more exciting here, maybe? Yeah, send it to Mike, and Mike will use it and prompt it, and maybe tell us also how he's doing it to create a post, a LinkedIn post for ZenLoop based on.
Yeah, you should get an email in like a few minutes.
Cool.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Email is still not fast enough.
yeah. Normally, so I'll talk a little bit maybe while we're waiting for the email. I'll talk a little bit about how I normally approach this. So you know, I've said this maybe a couple of times now, the context you put into the prompt is really what's key. And you heard in that call that they talked a little bit, there's some insights there in terms of that brand, like the about the fact that it didn't stick to certain types of plastic, right? So that is an insight that you could only really get from a customer call or a customer review. You know, and in this case, you know, it could be the customer calling up to complain. But, you know, in Ali's case, he already, you know, he's just doing a demo, but he got the AI to look at the reviews on Amazon, right? So what we can do from that is if we can take that transcript, we can extract the insights, like anything that's interesting about that call, like any interesting topic that came up. And then that itself can become content. We might want to create a LinkedIn post on, you know, don't actually, like, you know, our product doesn't work well for plastics, so don't buy us if we're trying to do it to plastics, right? You can turn that into some thought leadership, because you can explain why, you know, why that is the case, right? Like, you can explain the story behind it. You know, that's something that the CEO of that company would know. But just not really think about it. They, you know, on a day-to-day basis, because unless they've heard that customer call or seen that review, they may not realize that that's something that people are struggling with, and they might be able to explain in a bit more detail why that is. So, yeah, I've got the email from Ali here. So maybe I could share my screen and just kind of walk you guys through it, if that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Just make sure to narrate it, because we're then sharing it as a podcast. That would be super.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I've got up on my screen now is the email with the transcript. So I'm just selecting all of that, and then we're gonna bring up Claude. So I'm gonna use a couple of different tools here. So we're using Claude just to extract interesting insights. I've pasted in that transcript, and you can upload Google Drive docs now into Claude. You can upload files as well, or you could just paste in. But one of the first things I do with Claude when I'm prompting is that they like these kind of fake HTML tags. So what I would say is, like, I'm just gonna put this tag here. I'm just gonna say /transcript. With you know, the arrows around it, just like in HTML, you have like a paragraph tag or something like that. If anyone has ever written any kind of basic HTML code, and I'm just doing the same at the beginning of the transcript as well. So that clearly tells the LLM, okay, everything in between these two tags is the transcript from the call. And then that gives us a little bit of structure, both for humans to be able to read this prompt, like if you're going to make this into a template and do this again and again and again, but also just makes it very clear to the LLM where the, you know, the context ends, you know, and begins. So then you can kind of write the instructions that you want. So you could put the instructions in another tag if you wanted, or you, you know, you could just put it underneath. So what I'm going to say is, you are a marketing manager for, was it Taser? Is it Taser? T-E-Z-A. You are looking through customer calls to get ideas for a LinkedIn post, right? For the CEO. The goal of the CEO here is to build thought leadership in the adhesive space. whatever your goal is. The reason why it's important to give this much detail is that you're going to end up actually with a very different post if you have a different goal. And we can play around with that afterwards as well. You know, if the goal is to build thought leadership, it's going to give you a very different response than if the goal is to, like, sell duct tape, right? and the more explicit you can be with your instructions, the better. So what I'm going to ask for is, you know, give me 3 key insights that could form basis of a post. There's a couple of things that are interesting about LLMs, and it's the superpower that they have. One is, it can just look through a lot of information and pull out just the key parts. You know, like, it would be kind of boring maybe for a human to read through lots of transcripts, but you can actually dump quite a few transcripts in here, and it would be able to pull out some interesting stuff. But that's something that LLMs are very good at. The other thing is, they never get tired, right? So you could say, give me 100 key insights, right? And most of those insights would be terrible, because it would be really scratching the barrel for finding something interesting. But you know, you don't have to be worry about like it getting fatigued, right? You can say like, give me three key insights. Even if you think there's only one that you need, if you ask for three, then it gives you just more to choose from. And it doesn't cost you anything else, right? So I'm going to hit send there. And now we're going to get back the response. What we have, what has come back to us with is, it said one of the insights is that the rise in of AI in customer service revealed an interesting dynamic in the call. The AI could access specific product feedback. You could talk about basically balancing technological advancement with authentic customer connections, right? The second insight was that it actually pulled out this fact that like the adhesion on plastic surfaces doesn't work as well for this post. And, that could be a kind of an interesting thing to talk about. And then also there's confusion around brand identity, Taser versus Taser. So that could be a talk about how the marketing team handles this issue of like people misspelling the name or mispronouncing the name, right? So there's three pretty interesting insights there that you could use. The reason why I've extracted insights from this instead of just asking it to write a social post straight away is that it gives me a chance to be the human in the loop. Like it gives me a chance to choose which one of these I want to focus on. And it also lets me kind of debug the thinking, right? I can say like, actually, no, this isn't correct. Like I don't, these aren't the insights I expected, right? Like if there's something more juicy in there that I remember hearing on the call, I could, check out, like kind of rechange this prompt until I start to get results that match what I expect. The other reason why it's important to kind of break down this into steps, like I'm extracting the insights and then I'm going to create the social post, is that actually does improve the performance of the LLM as well. So it's a technique called chain of thought, where you ask it to kind of think first about what it could do before it does that task. And just like in humans, if you ask your employee to come up with three different angles for a social post and then write the social post, they're going to do a much better job than if you just ask them to write a social post, right? So there's a few different concepts at play here. But specifically, I really care about this plastic surfaces thing, right? So I'm going to copy that insight. And then I'm going to bring in a prompt template that I've used in the past. So for the benefit of people on the podcast who can't see this, what I've got up on my screen is the OpenAI Playground. And if you're a developer, this is what you would use to test out the models. You don't have to be a developer to use this, though. Like it's completely open. You just create an account. The one caveat is that you have to pay for each call through this, and it's very, very cheap, obviously. But like this is kind of a way of using ChatGPT without having the monthly fee. The reason why I use it is that it lets you save these templates. So I have hundreds of these templates saved for different clients and different automations that I do, and it just lets me kind of run them quite easily. What I have, this is, I'm not going to go too in depth into what the structure is of the prompt. It's quite a complex prompt, but there's a few different things that are useful here. One is that I actually invented my own social media framework. I call it bait, hook, reward, payload. The general idea was every successful social media post has these four elements. It has a bait to attract attention, it has a hook to keep people interested, and then it gives them some sort of reward for paying attention so that you they're open to the payload, which is like the action that you want them to take. So I don't need to go too much into social media. This isn't a social media lesson, but this is something that I found work, and I used this framework myself when I write social posts. So it makes sense that the LLM could use it too. So all the rest of the prompt is just instructions for using this framework to come up with good social ideas. And I've also put in some examples. So I've put in an example from a charity, like how they would use this framework. I put in an example from a hotel, how would they use this framework? Put in another one from travel, and then another one from thought leadership. So I've given four examples that I manually wrote in the past, and that really helps it give a much more satisfying result at the end, because I've given it four examples of what I like and how the right type of writing I think is good, then it just does a much better job. Cool. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add in here, I'm going to copy this past one here, And then I'm just going to put in, just going to take that insight about adhesives, right? And then I'm going to put that in as like a payload, right? So I'm just using this exact same structure that I have used in my examples. And it doesn't really necessarily matter what the structure is, but as long as it's consistent with the examples. So I'm just going to paste this in. So now all I have is like a thought leadership post in the adhesives sector. And then I've just put in this text that I copied across from Claude. So when I hit run, it's coming up with the bait. So it's using my framework. It's coming up with the bait, like how do we get people interested in the post? It's come up with the hook, which is like, how do we keep people's attention? And then it's come up with the reward. So it's followed that framework structure that I came up with, and then it's given me a post at the end. And I'm just going to read out this post so you can judge whether it's a good post or not. So the post starts with the age-old struggle of perfecting adhesion on plastic surfaces. Virtually anyone in the industry can attest to its challenges. At Taser, we transform these stumbling blocks into catalysts for innovation. Thanks to clear and honest feedback from our dedicated customers, we now have the opportunity to truly understand their limitations, find solutions to mount even the most advanced modern electronics. Right. So to me, this post isn't that great yet. This is the problem with AI, right? Like it's, you know, even if you do give it some good examples from past things, you know, you're not actually getting, you know, good results every time, right? So how would I improve this? Like this one sounds really kind of boring, and it's talking about we transform these stumbling blocks into catalysts for innovation, right? So it sounds too AI to me. So what I would do is I would, just to kind of show you how you'd keep improving the post, I would rewrite this post here and use that as an example. And then I would kind of rewrite it in a way that it would sound much better to me. Like I would write it from a first person, and then I would run the prompt again. So giving it a more of an example of the type of social post you want. When I'm working through this type of template where I'm going to be using it again and again, it's actually worth kind of manually writing these examples until it starts producing the type of thing that you want. I mean, we can keep going with this. I don't know how far you want to go, Anna, but you know, we could try rewriting it and see what it comes back with if you want me to.
Yeah, I think it's fine. It's already perfect. I mean, we kind of get the idea. I'm really happy about this. I'm really happy to say that, but I have a fairly similar workflow when it comes to AI. So what I sometimes add to this is, you know, I would add somebody else's post, like somebody that I really adore, like they write like amazing stuff. And I would put, you know, the first kind of output from AI, then I would rewrite it in kind of more of a my personal tone of voice. And then I would put this person's post that I really like and say, hey, like, kind of keep my tone of voice, but kind of merge it with the style of that person's post. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I just keep doing it until like I really like it, and then I rewrite it again. So it's a lot of work, but yeah, exactly, but it's kind of cool. Like it also makes you a better writer, I guess. Like you learn how to do these things.
Yeah, and you learn what you like and what you don't like about the right results. And yeah, like you could very easily in this prompt go back and change these examples or add more examples to it, right? If you find someone who talks really eloquently that you like, say you wanted it to be more like Steve Jobs or whatever, you could put a few kind of Steve Jobs style examples in here, and it's going to change the way it works entirely. So, but I think the main takeaway is really just, like if it is something you're going to be doing every day or every week, then you want to templatize it in some way. And as you build up those examples, it's just going to get better and better and better at writing in the same style as you.
Absolutely. Ali, anything to add here?
I think it's very, as Mike showed it, it's fascinating. And you can actually automate a lot of it as you provide the template and how you one might do it. One thing I would like to just show on top of this is just to give you a sneak, not a sneak peek, but a background on how the same thing, not in the context of content generation, but how in the context of actual information extraction works within, like I was saying, if there's a structured input, structured output, and so on, and how we generate insights from it, what is happening on the back end. So if I show you, you see my screen, right? And I take the same negative, let's say not the same, but a different negative TASER review here, and I add it into our system. So this is like happening automatically. But one thing you see here is that the prompt is actually just very structured JSON object where we say, these are the categories we want you to extract and so on. If I wanted, I could actually add a lot of experience here. So I say, this is purchase, this is inquiry, whatnot. But in this case, this is Amazon, so we don't do anything. I use GPT here and I just say, I want actions. I want to be able to suggest a reply and so on. And now when I actually analyze this, this will actually output a very structured output in terms of what can be done, which department should act on and so forth. And one thing that you will notice here is that the kind of automation you can run on top of it is very powerful. So now if we see here, this is actually structured output, which means that from a computer systems perspective, it's very easily handleable. So for example, what is the language of this comment? What are the topics that are raised here? So there is a product, there is quality, there's durability, there's design, and so on, customer experience. And then if I go down, it says, here are the action suggestions for this department. So now I could actually create a automation rule to say whenever there is a customer feedback that is targeting department product quality, this is what you should do. And it is automatically suggesting what they should do. And obviously it can be aggregated and sent out. And you see a reply to the customer here as well on, hey, this is sorry for doing this. And then there is a reply in customer's language, very contextualized on how to do it. So from a customer engagement perspective, on one side, what Mike showed is the actual content creation for marketing purposes. On the other side, there's content creation for engaging the customer in a very personalized way, which is what we have done here. And that is the power of converting it into a structured input, structured output, so you can actually automate in a very reliable way, which answers your question of, can we trust it? And how do you create these guardrails? And so that's the example here.
Awesome. Yeah, I think, I mean, we're over an hour already, and I feel like we can spend another couple just kind of showing all the examples of what you guys are doing. But maybe, you know, just to finish this this session, if maybe each of you could recommend, like, you know, if there is like an ultimate piece of advice that you would give to, you know, to a founder or solo founder or like a very lean team, like where to start automation, like how to, you know, what could be the first steps to automate their workflow or content creation or customer communication, like what would you recommend? Mike, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer to use AI as a brainstorming partner. And although that's not strictly automation in that you don't have to brainstorm every day, and it's a different brainstorm, hopefully, for a different task each time, I think it does really cut out a lot of the manual aspects. Like you can get AI to search the web for you, just like in Ali's demo, it's searching Amazon, right? And I think that can make a big difference. Because a lot of research is actually very low value tasks where you just kind of need like a little bit of intelligence to tell, okay, what is the topic of this? You know, what is the topic of this? What is the topic of this? And then bringing all that together to get insights. So I think that's a no-brainer. But I think in terms of recurring tasks, like anything that is anything that like an intern could do, you now have AI do it, right? So call notes, right? Like keeping notes of the call, like the transcript, and summarizing that transcript, I think is a no-brainer. Like I, you know, basically don't do any phone calls now that doesn't have AI listening and taking notes for me. And that means I can be much more present in the call as well, which is really helpful. And I very rarely forget things now. I could just go back over those transcripts. And then the other thing is, when you're recording all that data now, using it to make better decisions, so that those call transcripts can then go into your brainstorming process and give you a lot more context. Like, if you haven't done this, it's just a really fun thing to do. Go like dump a bunch of your call transcripts from Zoom or from Google Meet or whatever into the Google LM notebook, and then click generate audio summary. And what it does is it creates a podcast of two AI hosts talking about, you know, what happened on those calls. And it's fantastic. It's so good it's actually funny. And it's so good at summarizing all of that information down to just a few key insights. So if you haven't had that experience yet, go do it. Your mind will be blown.
Yeah, fascinating. Ali, you know a couple of things about turning anything into a podcast. So
I would say Rodcast is better than Google LM without any doubts. I would just slide that in. But as an advice, what I would say is that what I've found working with our team and lots of different teams, that the only limitation that people face is their own mental limitation. So they think, no, this cannot be done by AI. We will do it better. No, this cannot be done by AI because we have the experience. But what we have to all accept is that most of the things we do is knowledge-based, and AI is extremely good in organizing and presenting and shifting through knowledge, right? And from that perspective, anything that we can do or our team members can do, AI can, at the worst, assist us in that, and at best can do it far better than us. So, and for majority of things, and the other thing is, a lot of times people try something, let's say voice agent or anything, and they'd say, yeah, this sucks, it doesn't work. The thing is that the pace of innovation is so fast that you can't just outright reject something just because it doesn't work today, that it won't work 1 week from now. When a model changes from GPT-3.5 to GPT-4.0 and something, everything changes. And so it's no longer even the same thing anymore. And from that perspective, I would say that the first thing is that the mental barriers we have to get rid of and just accept it, because it's not going to go away. It's people are going to use it. I use it for development. And if there is an engineer who could be 10x better than me, but the fact is that productivity perspective, there can be no comparison. It's not even a question of 10x better or 50x better. It's just completely different, and you can't compete with that. The other thing, and let's say these outbound calls, like a human agent cannot compete with an AI agent doing 1,000 calls, let's say in one go. It's just impossible. So that's one. The other is that this, it's not about the state of technology right now, it's the speed of innovation. And the speed of innovation means that everything changes, and you can't just say if something doesn't work now, it will never work. It's just a matter of time. So you have to stay at it. And if you want to be competitive, if you don't want to be competitive, that's also fine. But if you want to be competitive and want to survive, then everything has changed now. It's better to accept it and use the tools. Yeah. It's like you can be a samurai, but if you go into a gun battle, too bad.
That's a great comparison. Well, thank you so much, guys. I mean, it's fantastic to listen to you and to learn what you can do and what you are actually doing with your workflows and all the automation. So thank you so much. I will link everything I can on YouTube and on LinkedIn for people to check out. But, if somebody wants to maybe talk more automations or Zenloop or whatever, what is the best way to find you guys? Mike?
Yeah, so for me, I'm @hammer_MT on Twitter. And I'm always on Twitter because I'm obsessed with that as much as AI. That's probably the best place to reach me.
Okay, you don't hate it yet? You're not moving to like Blue Sky or Threads or whatever?
No. There's not enough argumentation on Blue Sky. Everyone's too nice.
Okay, Ali, what about you?
No, for me, just go to zenloop.com and you'll find an AI version of me in here somewhere. But yeah,
it's better, faster, speaks any language.
Of course. Can help you with anything.
Good enough. All right. Well, thank you so much for a great talk. Happy to do it again anytime. And yeah, excited to see what you're going to come up with next.
All right.
Cool.
Thanks
Thanks
a
so
lot.
much.
Sure,
Have a good
anytime.
day.
Take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.